interest in running this class anymore. Garrett. Sorry.
what we said, what a telescope involves, lenses and mirrors, and the like, different kinds and different like arrangements of them to like magnify different levels, I guess. But it's not also just like, or just like visible light-based ones. It's like radio telescopes, which I imagine is like a simpler or a similar principle, just not using visible light.
Yeah, I mean, photon's a photon, but whether it has a wavelength that's long or short doesn't necessarily really matter for the basic principle of optics. It's true. What else? Anybody else talk about anything different? Something Garrett said was magnification. What do we mean by magnification? In particular, David.
So magnify something is to make it bigger. So if you want to see something that's far away, bigger, it's magnification.
Right. So we can see things with more detail, basically, right? We can make the picture of them bigger, right? So with a telescope, if I looked at someone in the back of the classroom, I'd see them with more detail than I would with my eye. And so that's the basic idea, right? Is that we want to use them as tools to be able to see what we're looking at in a better, more detailed, more quantifiable way in a lot of ways. Okay. So it's not just that we can make things look bigger, it's that we can also see to further distances away, right? That's going to be an important concept. Magnification, maybe a different way of thinking about magnification is resolution. You can see, sort of that's the idea of more detail, right? Even with my glasses, my vision is not great, right? But if I had a bigger lens to look through, I could see more detail in someone's face at the back of the room than I can now. Or even read text on a poster that I can't read, right? I really need a new prescription. Oh my God, it's bad. what sort of idea, there's sort of a fundamental principle behind telescopes that sort of enables all of these different things. Does anybody have any idea what that might be? What is it about a telescope that enables things to be magnified or see to further distances? Garrett?
Like refraction.
That's part of it, yeah. So using the lens, we'll be able to focus the light down to a particular point. Sophia?
Like the concavity of the lenses?
That's sort of the same idea as refraction.
You're capturing the electromagnetic waves over a larger area?
Right, it's the amount of area that you're observing with. Right? So your eye, your pupil, is the aperture that you see within your eye, right? That little black circle in the middle, right? It's not really black. It's just that light is being absorbed behind it, so it looks black. So I guess, anyway, an art major might have a different opinion on what black means, but it's the same idea with a telescope, right? If your aperture is bigger than your eye, you can collect more light. And if you can direct that down using focusing that light down with a concavity or whatever other way you want to think about that, you can concentrate that light at a different spot to observe it. So you can collect more light and direct it where you want it. And that's what lets you see further away. That's what lets you do magnification. And have better resolution. So let's quickly talk about the sort of two definitions that we can mathematically describe both of those things. The first one is something called light gathering power. Which basically is just saying exactly what it says on the box, right? How much light can you gather with your telescope? So that's going to be, we'll call it LGP for lack of a better term, and that's going to be proportional to the diameter of the telescope squared. So that's basically just area, right, if you think about it. The area of a circle, we'll assume things are circles, they could be squares, could be any theoretical shape, but let's assume that your aperture is a circle. The area is proportional to the diameter squared. It's really, it's pi r squared, right? But we'll just use diameter as the, get around all the constants and stuff with proportional. So that's equal to area. So bigger diameter telescopes have more ability to collect light, which makes sense, right? If you shine a flashlight that has a diameter of about an inch, right? And the aperture, you can't see the light because it's not that bright. But if you're trying to, that's too bright then probably, right? If you're trying to shine that through, I'll point it at my own eye. Shine that through a 5 millimeter diameter aperture, you'll only collect so much light. But if you shine it through a bigger lens like this one, right, you'll collect all of that light because that light is, that aperture is bigger than the aperture of your eye. That makes sense? That's really bright. That was a terrible idea. The other basic idea here is resolution. So when we talk about resolution, what we're really saying is seeing more detail or seeing smaller objects, or rather being able to distinguish smaller objects from each other. So if you sort of think about what resolution means to you in your daily life, you sort of think about like screens, right? What's the resolution of your phone screen? What's the resolution of your computer screen, your TV? So as you go from an ancient like tube television to a 4K like whatever plasma screen, you have more pixels in the newer, more modern television that lets you see more detail than you could with the older technology, right? That doesn't necessarily have to do with size, right? You can have a smaller television with a better resolution than a bigger, newer television, right? That's not totally related, but the idea is the same, that the amount of detail that you can see is different when you think about resolution. So higher resolution means more detail. There's more to talk about here, so we'll spend a little more time talking about it. So basically, resolution is going to be limited, let's do a different color here, limited by the diffraction of light. So what do we mean by diffraction here? So we briefly talked about the double slit experiment or single slit experiment earlier in the class. And so this idea of shining light through a small aperture. So imagine you have a wall with a little hole in it, and you shine light through, going through that. Diffraction will produce a particular pattern on a screen further away from that aperture that the light is going through, that would look something like this, where you have bumps of changing intensity. So this is intensity. Where you sort of build up in the center here, you have a bright patch of light, and then you have fainter patches of light next to it, fainter still patches of light further out. The drawing here is not particularly good. Let me show you an actual picture of what something like this might look like. Here is a diffraction pattern through a circular aperture. So you can sort of see here in the middle, there's this bright central part and then dark rings where the valleys in that distribution are. And then you have a slightly fainter ring around it and a slightly fainter ring around that and so on. This is called, for a circular aperture, this diffraction pattern is called the airy disk, just as a term for you to know if you want to look up more about this. So this pattern continues out, right, for many more orders, right? It's not just the three here, it keeps going. But what we mean by resolution, so this is the diffraction pattern produced by a circular aperture. What we mean by resolution is if we have two of these, if we have two sources of light, how close together can you get them and still distinguish them as separate objects? So, dropping in a different picture is if you had two of these diffraction patterns, and you started moving them closer together, how close would you get before you couldn't tell that there were two there anymore? Does that make sense, David?
And this is like each of one of those is like a slit, like in terms of the dumb slit experiment, or like an aperture.
Think of this as two different sources of light going through the same aperture, basically. So each of these two waves will produce two patterns that are some distance apart from each other.
And are they going through the same hole or slit?
Yes. Sophia.
So you're saying resolution is how close you could get two diffraction patterns before you can't tell them apart.
Correct.
And that's like the meaning of that is, or like the meaning as it relates to telescope is that. The data that you get, what you see, / the data you get from a telescope is a diffraction pattern because you're looking at it through one of these apertures. So
correct.
This would correspond to like being able to see two different objects.
Yes.
And distinguish them.
Yes. In the real world, it ends up being more complicated than that for a very specific reason, which we will talk about by the end of class, hopefully, which is the atmosphere. But in the theoretical limit, the diffraction limited case, that's how it works, yeah. Any other questions about that? Okay. So if you think about it a different way, right? If you have an aperture of a fixed size, right? If I'm sort of standing here and I'm watching, there are two of you walking together from the other side of campus, right? How close can you get to me before I can tell that you are two different people? If you're walking next to each other. It's sort of maybe a different way of thinking about it. Okay. Change that. Okay. So we can quantify how far apart these two sources of light can be before they appear to be a single object. So this is something called the Rayleigh criterion. So the way we would say this with words is the minimum resolvable angular distance between two objects and the way we will define it is by saying two objects are just resolved when the central maximum, that's the middle part here, overlaps the first minimum of the other. So that's what you're seeing in this middle diagram here. Right, if you sort of look at the, when we're talking about the first minimum, we're talking about the first black ring around the bright part. So if you sort of follow where that bright ring goes, it sort of will go right through where that central brightest part will be. Whereas in this bottom one, they're too close and the central minima or central maxima sort of overlap each other and they look like they're one bright object. Right, David?
So in that middle case, it would be just resolved, right?
Correct.
And then above that and below that are the, it's like,
easily resolved.
The criterion, right?
Yeah, this is easily resolved and
right.
This is not resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so this is obvious that there are two different sources. This is obvious. Not obvious that they are two different sources. And this is just on the edge. If your vision was really bad, you wouldn't be able to tell. So how do we define that mathematically? So we're thinking about the angular distance between the two. So we need an angle here. We'll say theta min. So that's minimum angular distance. Is equal to 1.22 lambda divided by d, where d is the diameter of the aperture. And lambda is the wavelength of the light that you're looking at. And the 1.22 basically comes from the geometry of how far apart the central maximum and the first minimum are. Question.
Does that come out in radians?
So this would be in radians, that's right. In a moment, we will talk about different ways of measuring angular distances, and we'll show how to convert between radians and arc seconds. You want to do that, but yes, this angle will be in radians. Sophia?
Is this like kind of similar to like the diffraction limit, right? Like in microscopy?
Yes.
Like kind of the other extreme, or is it just straight up the same thing?
It's the same concept. Yeah. Optics are optics. Yeah. It's just microscopy looks at small things and telescopes look at far away things. Okay, so why is wavelength part of this? What does that mean for the resolution of light as you change around wavelengths. If you had a constant aperture, right, if you had a 5 millimeter aperture like you have in your eye, what kind of light is going to have a better resolution? Where when we say better, right, we mean smaller in this case. Does that make sense? Because we're talking about the minimum distance between the two, that you can tell that they're different. You want that minimum distance to be smaller to see more detail. So at a fixed aperture size, what kind of light will have a better resolution? Blue or red? Blue, right? Because it has a shorter wavelength. So overall, your minimum angular distance will be smaller for the same aperture. At any fixed wavelength, a bigger telescope is better. A bigger aperture is better, right? Because you have to have a bigger number on the bottom to make that number smaller overall. But that also means that if you want the same resolution at a longer wavelength as you do at a shorter wavelength, you need a bigger telescope to compensate. So we'll see that radio telescopes are much bigger than optical telescopes to achieve the same resolution because radio wavelengths are much longer than optical wavelengths, right? They have big dishes, whereas optical telescopes can be like this big and have the same resolution. Okay. So smaller is better for resolution. And by contrast, for light gathering power, bigger is better. Okay, so how are we going to achieve these two different things? How are we actually going to use this in practice to see things out in the universe or through a microscope or whatever we want to do? So let's talk about the simplest possible design that we can for a telescope. And that's going to be a single lens. Like so. Steve.
So your glasses are simple telescopes.
Yeah. They're not very powerful ones. But they count. Contact lenses. That's a telescope that you wear in your eye. When you put it that way, it sounds pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
So I have some lenses here. There should be 9 of them here. Yeah. So can we pass these around so that there's one per group, right? So that you can share, because there's obviously more than 9 of you. So you know what your groups are, so keep one per group. Hopefully every group gets one. So what's this lens gonna do, right? How does a lens work? It focuses light, right? Why does it focus light? It's just a piece of glass. What's up here?
Curvature.
Is it curvature?
It's
part of it.
Thickness is part of it. And it's also the fact that glass has a different refractive index than air, right? Which means that it has a different speed of light than air does, or vacuum, or whatever, right? So the details of that are like the optics course in the physics department, right? So we're not gonna spend time talking about it, right? But you can see, right, if I hold this up, you can see light being focused behind it on the screen, right? There's a brighter patch there. I move it further away, or closer, that changes, right? You can see. Oh, look at that. I'm focusing that down on the screen.
It's getting brighter.
That's really bright, right? We've concentrated all that light down into a single point. If you look through the lens that you have, and if you hold it right up to your eye, it just looks like more or less like what you would see normally, right? It may be a little bit blurry. My vision is already really blurry. I can't see any of your faces. And I really need a new prescription. I'm a little dizzy. Okay. So if you hold it up close, right, you see what you would normally see. If you move it further away, until you can sort of get it to focus, what happens to the image that you see? I have to hold it way out at the length of my arm to do that. And I probably have longer arms than most of you. I'm tall, but...
Oh, it's upside down.
It's upside down. Can you all get the image to flip?
Yeah.
It's hard to see with the image on the screen, but we can try it, right? There's that M upside down.
It does that like in a spoon, too. Like if you can push that
out. Yeah.
Simplest possible design. You can also see it if I have a laser pointer here, right? If you point the laser pointer through it and you go through the edge, right, it sort of jumps to the other side, and then you can watch the light go out the other side as it moves backwards. There's a little bit of retrograde motion there as I move the laser. Does any group not have a lens? Has anyone not looked through a lens yet? I have one more I can share if someone wants it. So let's put some diagrams up here now. You're gonna have to give those back. You can't keep those, sorry. Okay, let's see, where is my diagram here? Here we go. So we'll think about this in terms of stars, I guess. We'll take like objects that we're observing through the lens. So if we have two stars, which are separated by an angle theta in the field of view, that light's gonna pass through the lens and get focused onto something called the focal plane. So that's where the in-focus image is displayed on the focal plane. At a distance F away from the lens, and separated still by an angle theta, but on the focal plane, those two things are separated by a physical distance d. So basically, how far apart are the two images away from each other in millimeters or something? So this big F here is something called the focal length. So that's how far away from the lens is the image in focus, right? How far away do you have to get to be able to see an in-focus image of whatever you're looking at? For this lens, it's supposed to be 30 centimeters, which if it's in focus here, that doesn't seem right to me, but maybe I'm wrong. We don't have any meter sticks in here. How far away from lens is image in focus? And then D, the focal plane, D tells you the angular separation theta is the same. What's the right way to say this? The angular separation on the sky out here is the same as the angular separation on the focal plane, but the physical distance between the two is different, right? Because one is much closer than the other to the lens. So D is the size of the image. So these three things are related to each other through trigonometry, right? We have an angle and two sides of the triangle here. So tan of theta is equal to D divided by F. I guess I should write capital F, because that's... Something that we're going to rely a lot on in astronomy, in this class in general, is the small angle approximation. So you're all nodding, so you all know what that is, right? What is the small angle approximation? Somebody remind me. Garrett? Sophia?
It's a Taylor's series approximation, so for different functions, like for sine and cosine, you have different ways of approximating sine of theta when theta is small.
Yeah, so specifically for our case, in the most of what we're going to do in this class, is that the tangent of theta is just equal to theta. But we'll give it a little squiggly equal sign, so we know that it's not exactly the same thing, right? So if we're going to approximate tan theta with theta, we can just say then that theta is D divided by F. Easy enough. Where this angle is, again, in radians. David? A degree or less, would you say, Ray?
Yeah.
A degree or less.
Yeah, like I've heard like some people when they use it, they say like 15 degrees, and then like one of my classes the other day just said 6 degrees, so I'm like, it's a lot of different, you know. I was just curious.
I think basically the idea is that in astronomy, like the biggest objects in the sky that you can see in your day-to-day life are the moon and the sun, and they're half a degree across. And so anything bigger than that, you have to think about differently anyway. So half a degree is fine for this. So anything that you're trying to look at in the sky that's not like a big, far apart distance is, you can use this. Steve?
Would you be concerned if we could observe any celestial object being larger than a degree?
It depends on how the size of the celestial object.
Like, wouldn't it be like stupid close?
Yeah, I mean, if the moon were a degree, you'd probably want to worry.
Okay. I'm just wondering, like, you know, like proximity-wise, like what could
Because that would mean it was, you know, half as close as it used to be.
I think the Andromeda galaxy is like 3 degrees on the sky.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We're not worried about that.
Not for 5 billion years, anyway. So it's not your problem. And the way we're going, probably not any human's problem either, anyway. But I mean, 5 billion years is a long time, guys. but you know, satellite. If a satellite's bigger than the degree, then probably also want to worry, actually. Oh, I chipped it. Broken glass. Careful. My bad. Yes. Yeah. Generally, we want things in the sky to be small. Yeah. Unless we know they're not getting closer to us. Okay, so we could also measure this in arcseconds if we want, because we're going to do a lot of stuff in arcseconds in astronomy because it's a slightly more convenient way of measuring things. In degrees instead of radians, because, you know. So if you want to measure this in arcseconds, you have to multiply it by 206,265. Where did I get that number? Yeah, that's how many arcseconds there are in a radian. So 180 divided by pi times 3600 divided by 1 degree. That gives you 206,265. Remember that number. That's a very important number. It's up here now. Burn that number into your brain. It's going to come up like 10 different times in the next two semesters because of that exact reason. So basically what this means is, so if you want to think about, this helps you determine how big the image that you're producing with your lens is, right? So if you know your focal length, and you know the angular separation of the two objects, that tells you how big in physical size your image is going to be, which is a useful thing to know, right? Because if you want to take a picture of it, you want to know, is it going to fit on my film or photographic plate or camera sensor? Right, so you need to know if you're going to be able to capture that entire object or not. So there's another thing in here that we want to think about called plate scale, which is not asking how big is your dinner. It's asking, I'm sorry, Ray, I had to. It's a pun. He really did not like that one. Plate scale, it refers to photographic plates, which is how we originally took pictures with telescopes. Basically, like film emulsion painted on a piece of glass. Better than film because they're rigid and you can flip them around and not worry about distortions. Plate scale S is equal to theta divided by d, which is equal to 206,265 divided by the focal length in millimeters. So basically this number would come out in units of arcseconds per millimeter. You could say, if my object is this big across in angular size, it will be this big across in millimeters in the image. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's a single lens, right? Is that going to be a particularly useful way of looking at stuff in the sky? Alex says yes. I mean, yeah, you could use a magnifying glass, I guess. You have to get really close to the thing you're looking at to really be able to see it. David?
Which one you use two, so you can flip the image again?
Yeah. Also, things are upside down, right? So if you use two, so this is something called a refracting telescope. So now we're going to use two lenses. In an arrangement like this. That looks a lot more complicated, doesn't it? It's not really. So we still have angle theta, and a focal length. We're going to call, for both lenses here, we're going to call the lens that the light goes through first. That's called the objective lens. Hence, focal length of the objective. And then the smaller lens that the light goes through second is called the eyepiece, for perhaps obvious reasons, because you look through it, right? So, F eyepiece. So we have those two different focal lengths. And then we have two different angles here, right? Because there's two different lenses. So we have theta and phi to worry about here. So if we're going to relate these two things together, right, we can use our angle relation from above here again, where we said tan theta is d over f, right? But now we're going to use d as a intermediary variable. We're not going to worry about what the size of the image is here, because we only care about what will happen to the light after it comes out this second lens now. So if tangent of theta is equal to d over f objective, and tan phi, that's not phi, is equal to d over f eyepiece, because we're using the same image here, d would be here, basically. You can draw it in. D. If we use the small angle approximation and D to set these two things equal to each other, we can basically just say that phi divided by theta is equal to the ratio of the two focal lengths, so the objective divided by the eyepiece. So what this tells us is something called M, lowercase m, which is the magnification. Of the telescope. So if you had a objective lens with a focal length of 10 millimeters and an eyepiece with a focal length of 1 millimeter, your magnification would be a factor of 10. Right. So this is a good telescope design, right? It's easy to do. All you need is two lenses. Lenses are pretty easy to come by at small sizes. If you had a 30 centimeter focal length lens And a 5-centimeter focal length lens, you could get a magnification of 6, and that would probably make a telescope that's like this big. That's pretty good, right? So if we want to get better magnifications, so in this case, magnification basically is going to be equal to resolution, right? The bigger we can make the image, the more detail we can see. What sort of designs are we going to have to use to make a big telescope? What would the design for a refracting telescope look like? If you think about, we got engineers here, right? What would you have to do to make something, make a telescope with 2 lenses? Talk about it for a minute. How would you do it? What would your design be? You'd actually want to put it closer than the focal length so that it would focus somewhere else, basically. If that makes sense. But you're a bit ahead of the game on that one. What do we think? What would be a good design for a refracting telescope? Steve.
Size matters for light gathering power.
Yep.
So you just make that area ginormous, like by the size of a building, or the largest one can manage. Also mentioned that it would probably be beneficial if the telescope was in a vacuum to reduce any sort of nonsense.
Okay.
Going on in there.
So we're
going
to make a giant space telescope with lenses, right?
Yeah, I think
sounds nice.
but I mean, the magnification, you know, you just amp up that objective focal length, and there you go.
Here's the problem about focal length, is usually the bigger the focal length, the bigger the lens. So if you want a long focal length, you got to have a giant freaking lens.
Yep.
What are lenses made out of?
Glass.
Is glass heavy? Yeah, it is. So here is a picture of the CASE rooftop telescope. Looks nice, right? This is a, who said that? You're banned from the rooftop telescope. It's kind of blurry, but that's a 10-inch primary lens on that, objective lens. And then there's a little eyepiece down here, which is like a few millimeters across. This telescope has a magnification of 100. And this thing is like 12 or 13 feet long. And made of stainless steel and brass. It's heavy. And this is big, right? for a magnification of 100. Here is the biggest, one of the biggest refracting telescopes that was ever constructed. This is the Yerkes Observatory in southern Wisconsin.
What is it called?
Yerkes. There's a dude down there. He's about that big, right? That's a big honking telescope. That's a 40-inch lens. The biggest lens that you can make. And okay, let's one more thing about this design. What do you have to do with a lens to support it in this tube? Can you put like a support underneath it? You just have to hold it from around the outside, right? Like this. Is that going to work particularly well for a giant lens? A giant heavy glass lens? No. The biggest glass lens you can make is about 100 inches, which is big. No, it's not that big. Sophia? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the focal length of the eyepiece is. But
how about like a pair of like binoculars that you get from astronomy, like how would they compare to the Case telescope?
Those are usually like in the range of 20 magnification, I think. Roughly for a pair of binoculars. So that's 5 times worse than the Case telescope. So the biggest you can make a lens is like 100, right?
Gonna add the Yerkes is the biggest that is still around. The biggest refracting telescope ever was the Great Paris Exhibition Telescope. That's just slightly bigger than that, at about 1.25 meters.
Uh-huh.
But it was so long, it was about 60 meters long, that they couldn't even lift it up to point at the sky. It laid horizontal outside the Eiffel Tower, and it was so big that the tube collected air and dust and water, so you couldn't even do science with it. It just laid on the ground for a few years until it was dismantled.
Nice.
It wasn't even used like once.
It was used once to look at the sun as it was coming up on the horizon.
The world's best useless telescope. So if you need to support that lens, you're limited by your design, right? You have to get bigger and bigger, and you just can't hold that lens up anymore without making the tube really heavy and really long, right? The size of this room is huge, right? You have to build a building around it so it doesn't get wet. Not gonna work. So weight's a problem. Supporting the lens is a problem. There's another problem with lenses, and that's that lenses focus red and blue light at different focal lengths. doesn't help. So usually what we have to do there is have two lenses right next to each other that can help correct for that. It's called chromatic aberration. So now you've doubled your lens weight. Now you're really screwed. So how are we gonna get around that, David?
Mirrors.
Mirrors are great. This is going to be something called a reflecting telescope. How would you design a reflecting telescope? What kind of mirror would you want, first of all? A clean one. That's actually not necessarily true, but it can be a little dirty. It's fine. Not a big deal. Lenses, too. Talk about it for a minute. How would you design a reflecting telescope? Remember, you want to focus light.
Clear?
Yes.
extending the wavelength of which we put on the
telescope, so
necessarily.
That's what I said.
I remember saying that one time. You can put
like
at least like you can put more than one meter. I know that. You can put multiple meters and like bounce it around. So it doesn't have to use.
Eric.
You can bounce the light between mirrors.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what kind of mirror are you gonna use? Just a normal flat mirror?
I think if you're using a lens, you can get away with like a flat mirror.
No lenses.
No lenses at all?
No lenses.
You might need a curved mirror then.
Curved mirror. What's a curved mirror gonna do?
Joanna. It's gonna concentrate the light.
Yeah, right. So this is our very basic design, is to have a curved mirror that when you bounce the light off of it, it bounces toward a focal point. So the very simplest design is a spherically curved mirror. I'm gesturing like I'm doing a sphere, but wow. Right, so a curved mirror, bounce light in, and it reflects back off toward a focal point like that. A rough sketch, but we have a diagram here for some real designs. Here are some basic reflecting telescope designs. So up here at the top, we have something called prime focus, which you just have a mirror and it bounces back light to this spot here, which is the focal point. And so your focal length here is this distance. What's going to be the problem with that design, David?
Your focal point is in the front. It is in the focus. Like
it's in front, right? That's so you're going to block some of the light you're trying to observe. In practice, that's not necessarily a big deal in a lot of ways. It's more about the size of the aperture than something being in the way. So you can kind of get around that, but you also have to worry about how you observe that stuff and how do you get in there to see it. That's tough. If your head is bigger than the telescope, that's not going to work, right? So a lot of telescopes that you can buy are telescopes called Newtonians, which have a little mirror in there which bounces the light off the side, which I think you guys were talking about at this group here, right? So you can see how now what we've done is we've moved the focal point outside the body of the telescope by having this mirror in between where the focal point should be and the spot where the light goes. Sophia?
Physically, is the focus where you look, or?
No, so the focus is where, you'll put the eyepiece close to the focus, basically, is the idea with that. Or whatever other instrument you're using to do your observation, whether it's a camera or whatever. Here's a third design called a cassegrain, which has another mirror, but now instead of bouncing off the side, you go back down and go through a hole in the back of the mirror and do it there. So you'd have to be below the telescope to see that one, or behind it, I guess. And then another design is the coudé design, which adds in another mirror that goes out far away. Those aren't super common. What are some problems with What are the advantages of this particular, let's not do problems first, let's be positive. What are the advantages of a reflecting telescope design? Can you support a mirror from below easily? Heck yeah. So that means you can make giant mirrors, right? Big old room-sized mirrors, no problem, and support the weight from below. Why is that good? What are you improving by making a giant mirror? Light gathering power. You have a giant aperture. You can collect a ton of light. That also means you improve your resolution too, right? What are mirrors made out of, though? Glass still, right? Shiny glass. Is glass a particularly good solid? Not really, right? When it gets heavy, it can deform pretty easily. So a lot of the time, you have to deal with that. Here's a basic reflecting telescope design. Here's a picture of it from the front. Here are some people, right? So you can sort of see the scale. This is a 3.5 meter diameter telescope. So you can see here's the main mirror back here. Here's something here in the middle that's helping direct light in a particular direction. And then you can't see from here, but there's another mirror way up top that bounces light back down towards this thing here. So this is sort of a combination design. This guy's about yay tall. So you can kind of get a scale perspective there. He's a short dude. It's a famous astronomer, but this is a big piece of glass. So the back side of this telescope looks like this. So this is a partially, this is what we call the Cassegrain focus, right? This is that hole in the mirror that you come out the back so you can see behind. So you could stand here with an eyepiece and observe at that telescope. It's really cool. These are basically, these are like actuators. I'm not an engineer. Basically, these are like pneumatic something that they push depending on what direction the telescope is pointing to keep the mirror in shape. Because it's so heavy that when you move it around, it has to. Steve?
Design wise, do you know why they picked a hexagon?
I don't know. I mean, if you look at it, the blue part is circular.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know why they put a hexagon on it. Yeah. It's probably something to do with the instrument that goes in it, fitting in. We're not going to talk about instruments today. Joanne.
How big is this thing we're looking at?
The diameter of the big blue part is 3.5 meters, a little bit bigger. So probably like the distance between the two edges of the desks in the front, width of the group of desks. Garrett?
So with that thing that's in the, I guess, yeah, with like the thing that's reflecting the light back so you can see through the thing, so you're not losing that much light. It's like that takes up like a significant, it seems like it takes up a significant amount of the mirror, but you're not losing that much.
All the reflective part on here, you can still see light with. So you're only losing about, I think, like 10% of your light collecting area and none of your resolution. So it's usually judged to be a trade-off, right? The realities of life always get in the way of these things. So you can make reflecting telescopes really big, right? You can't make giant single mirrors because that's just too heavy. But what they do now is they make segmented mirrors where they have a bunch of small mirrors that go together to make one big one. And they can kind of do this adjustment thing independently. So right now they're building a 30 meter diameter telescope. 30 meters.
The biggest one, the European creatively named European Extremely Large Telescope. It's just under 40 meters.
Yeah.
It'll be launched in 2024.
Well, commission.
Yeah, commission.
They're not launching it anywhere. The James Webb Space Telescope, which is launching, hopefully, finally, next month. No, in December.
In November.
Somewhere in the winter. That's 6 meters, right?
I think so.
So, and that's got a segmented mirror, too, and so that's sort of a reflective design. Sophia?
What type of telescopes were the ones that made up the Event Horizon telescopes, like radio, or?
Those are all radio telescopes, yeah. And not even necessarily single radio telescopes. There's multiple ones together that
yeah.
do. Yeah. We don't have time to talk about interferometry today, but David?
Are there combination telescopes that use lenses and mirrors?
Yes, there are. Thank you for the segue. So let's talk about quickly about the issues for reflecting telescopes, right? So one thing is that when you have a spherically curved mirror, the focal lengths of each like ring of the mirror are different, and so they don't all focus in the same place. So that's not good, right? If you have, it's called spherical aberration, and it basically has an effect like this, where things get a little messy, things are out of focus on the outside of the image and in focus on the inside, more or less. That's true of any spherically curved optical surface, not just reflecting telescopes. There's also something called coma, which when you look at things on the edge of your aperture, they get blurred out in sort of a weird way that looks like this. So this is the in-focus part of the image, and then there's this, coma means hair, so it's this sort of hair that comes out around it. That's a problem in reflecting telescopes as well. And there's astigmatism. Which basically looks like this, where your mirror or lens or whatever isn't perfectly circular, and so one side is a little curved more than the other, and so you get things that aren't round anymore, which is an issue. So by making different designs of telescopes, you can get around some of these issues. And so a hybrid design is one way of doing that. The most popular hybrid design is called a Schmidt type. And that's basically where you have a spherical mirror at the bottom and a corrective lens at the top to account for the spherical aberration of the lens. That would look something like this, where you have a lens at the top, a mirror at the bottom, and then something in between to handle what direction you go to do observations. So that would be sort of any of the designs that we saw for the reflecting telescopes. It could be any of those. You could go out the side, you could go out the bottom, you could do whatever. CASE's research telescope is a Schmidt-type telescope. So if you want to know more about that, let me know. Or let Ray know, because he uses data from it for his thesis work. I don't have a picture of it queued up, so. The other design, it's not a hybrid design, but it's called a Ritchie-Chrétien. And that is uses hyperboloid mirrors instead of spherical or parabolic mirrors. to reduce spherical aberration. And this telescope, this is a Ritchie Chrétien design. So that removes coma and spherical aberration from the design, which is good. Just in for the last couple minutes, let's talk about other practical considerations that you have to worry about for using telescopes. What are going to be some other things that you have to deal with besides the design of your telescope, whether it's a refracting, reflecting, hybrid design? Talk about it for 30 seconds real quick. All right, throw some problems at me.
Funding.
What?
Funding.
Fun. Yeah, I mean funding, that's true. If you want to build Steve's giant refracting space telescope, you're going to need like $100 billion. So.
Yeah.
Get started on that one, Steve.
I will.
What else?
Geography.
Maybe that's like very serious.
What was yours, Sophia? Indeed. Demand. What else? Clouds. Can't see through clouds, can you? Anything else?
Damage.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways things can get damaged, right? So you want to have a nice building around your telescope so it doesn't get full of rocks or something. David? Yeah, manufacturing quality is, I mean, that's what happened to Hubble, right? They had to fly up a new corrective lens so that it could actually do what it was supposed to do. Joanne?
Like, actually moving it to like direct down what you want to look at?
Yeah, I mean, the design of the mount of the telescope is important too, right? You have to be able to point it where you want to point it. That's a good one, actually. There's a 10-meter telescope in Texas that can't go up or down. It just looks one direction. Is still useful. Sophia?
It's kind of similar to demand, but like observations, like one observation can take a long time. So you have to make sure the conditions are good and that other people don't need it at that time and all that.
Right. If you want to look at a bright star, that's a lot different than looking at a faint galaxy. You need a lot more time to look at a faint galaxy than a bright star. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and usually you have to fly there to learn how to use it the first time. So that gets expensive. Anything else? I mean, just the atmosphere in general, right? There's all sorts of things in the atmosphere that are problems. There's light pollution from atmospheric reflection and refraction and stuff. That's a big one, light pollution. So you got to go out to the desert, basically, on a mountain. And then just this idea that the atmosphere is thick and refracts light itself. So you usually don't get to use your telescope's theoretical resolution limit because the atmosphere just blurs everything out. So you're stuck with, even if your theoretical resolution limit was a tenth of an arc second, you can't, you're limited to 1 arc second because of the atmosphere, on average. Sometimes it's worse. We'll come back to that on Wednesday. Because we're past time.